Hello and welcome back to another episode of Community Guidelines. I'm your host, Dr. Bradford, naturopathic physician, coming at you here from downtown Gilbert Healthcare. We are experts in natural medicine. Dr. Dan, unfortunately, is out today. He had some things to do, but we have a special guest, Coach Chris Carlisle. So we're going to be talking with him, talking about all kinds of things. Coach C's got a pretty extensive background in the sporting world, and he's an author, motivational speaker, and so we're super excited to have him with us today. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing great, Dr. Bradford. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you. I was talking to Dr. Graham, and I said, hey, he said, I'm not going to be able to be there today, and I said, well, you're going to mess the best show ever.
I know. We're going to have to make him jealous.
Yeah, well. We will. We already have. It's already, we're at that time already.
So how you doing? Chris, tell us about yourself. Where are you from and what brings you here to Arizona? And let's get into it.
Chris Carlisle. I was born in Chicago. We moved. My dad was at the railroad.
Oh.
And so he moved to each site. My dad really set a path for me when we were growing up in that he never took an easy job. Every dirty, bad job there was in the railroad, he took, and he turned it around and made it a moneymaker.
He's the original Mike Rowe, huh?
He's that kind of guy. He would go in there and take over a division that was losing money, hemorrhaging money, and he would turn it into a moneymaker. He built a grain line from Kansas City to the Great Lakes and then a coal line from the Rockies all the way to the Great Lakes also.
So Oh, my goodness.
That's what he did. And so it was one of those things. In my life, I'm the same kind of guy.
Yeah.
You know, find me the job. Coach once told me that good jobs never open up. You make them good jobs.
Isn't that the truth?
Yes. And so I've always worked with that. I've gone from program to program and helped develop them into champions.
Excellent. Man, what an example to have growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, somebody who's not afraid of getting their hands dirty and doing the work that needs to be done.
Right. And well, then my mother, who was, you know, who's a saint, both have passed away, unfortunately, but I was born with a physical handicap in both feet, and the doctors told my mother and my father that, you know, your son will never run like the rest of the children. And my mom said four words to them: "We'll see about that."
Love it.
And so the doctors were right, of course. I never ran like that. I ran better. I earned a scholarship to play college football.
Okay.
All right. And so it's one of those things that you can be weighted down by everybody's opinion.
Sure.
When you listen to what everybody wants you to be or who they want you to be, then you become who they are.
Right.
And not who you are.
Right.
After that, because I didn't walk really well during the training of getting, and this is in the 60s now, we didn't have the physical therapy, we didn't have the naturopath, the chiropractors that we do now.
Right.
And so I knocked both of my teeth out, falling down. And so I developed a speech impediment. And so I remember in fifth grade, parent-teacher conference, and the speech pathologist or therapist said, "Mrs. Carlisle, your son will never be a public speaker."
Mm.
She said four words.
We'll see about that.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm doing today. I'm a public speaker and travel the country speaking to corporations, teams, businesses, trying to set their culture and turn them around.
It's amazing what can happen when you don't listen to those voices.
Well, that's the problem.
Right?
That's
the
problem.
Did you guys go back to that doctor and show him your how well you ran?
No. No, it's one of those things, you do it for yourself. But too many people allow the wrong voices to affect their choices.
Yeah.
You know, if we look at the voices and choices, the people that are around you, the voices that are around you that lead you, are they the ones who are, well, I've always said there's two anchors in life. The anchors that keep you from crashing into the rocks and the anchors that keep you from sailing on to your farthest point. And you've got to figure out which voices those are, the people that are trying to save you from crashing in the rocks, or the ones who are preventing you from moving on, living the life that you're meant to live.
Yeah.
And so I've been blessed to have great voices. It's like Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela always said, "I never lose.
Okay.
I either win or I learn."
Mm.
And too many people, when they lose, they shut the door. Ah, that's it. I can't do anymore. I'm done. I tried.
Absolutely.
So I'm just going to go ahead and live somebody else's dreams. I'm going to go ahead and work 8 hours a day, 40 hours a week for somebody else's dreams.
Yeah.
Because I failed this one time.
Yeah.
But if you take on Mandela's idea now, and remember, Mandela spent 26 years in a South African prison.
Yeah.
And he was given the opportunity to leave All he had to do was sign papers, say that he was wrong, and leave the country. And he wouldn't do it for 26 years. And so this man telling us that he never loses.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity in life that is, that we never have to lose again. All we have to do is continue to learn.
Yeah.
And those mistakes we make, those are the best learning, because we took it hard. It was like, dang, you know, that was a bad idea right there. But what did I learn out of it?
Yeah.
And so in our life, as we go through our life and we run into those things, Randy Pausch, another voice around me, wrote a book called The Last Lecture.
Okay.
Pausch was a professor at Carnegie Mellon University. And every year, Carnegie Mellon would have a lecture series, and it was called The Last Lecture. So, Dr. Bradford, if you were to give your last lecture,
yeah,
what would it be on? And so here comes now Randy Pausch. Now, he had been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, was given about a year to survive.
My goodness.
And he gives this talk, and in that talk, he talks about the walls. The walls that are in front of us, they're not there to stop us, he says. They're there to decide how badly we want something. Mm. The walls are there for the other people. But if you can find underneath, over top, or around, you know, those walls are there just to test to see how much you really want this.
Yeah.
And so when I'm talking about choices and voices, those people around me, my father, my mother, Mandela, Pausch, all these people are just lifting me all the time because they're positive voices that lead me to want to be better than I am.
I've heard kind of variations on this kind of phrase or concept is that you are the sum of like the 3 to 5 people that you are closest to, or that you listen to the most, or that you surround yourself with. And you're right. You're absolutely right. It's all about who you listen to and what you do with that information. You know, just going back to the simple thing about the doctor telling you that you're never going to run, you know, you could have taken that and adopted that and had that become your story.
Without a doubt.
But you didn't. Oh my gosh, you didn't.
Right.
And so sometimes, maybe we can get into it too. Sometimes those voices are not always external, right? Sometimes that voice is what you say to yourself.
Without a doubt.
And I'm sure you've seen that with your background working with high performance athletes, right? So tell us a little bit about your professional background.
Well, professional background, I worked from the high school level to the junior college level to the college level to the NFL.
Yeah.
I was blessed to be with teams that allowed me to win championships at each level, the high school level, the junior college, 3 in college, and then a Super Bowl.
Awesome.
And so I was blessed to be in organizations that were set, that everybody worked together so we could do what we all wanted to do.
Yeah.
So working with high-performance athletes, you have to treat them as individuals. I think you do that in all of life. You never group everybody together. And so you treat everybody the same. You treat them as individuals. You allow each person to go ahead and make their way with you. And so when we're training high performance athletes, it's about, and my philosophy during when I was a coach was all about movement.
Okay.
Think about the game. If you think about the Super Bowl, there were 11 people on this side of the ball, 11 on that side of the ball. When the ball was snapped, they had one thing in common, and they moved.
Yeah.
The team who moved more efficiently, faster, quicker, more explosively were the better athletes. The better athletes give the coaches better chances. So my job was not to see how much they could bench press or squat or deadlift. That was any gym monkey can go ahead and make people strong.
Yeah.
Okay. It's training athletes how to move more efficiently.
I just saw just last night, actually, I was scrolling through social media and there was a clip of, so he's a rock climber, 160 pounds. And he's on the leg press, and two big old meatheads next to him. I mean, these guys were huge, clearly bodybuilders, probably doing some gear and some testosterone. And they are just floored because this guy is lifting the same amount of reps, the same amount of weight, with no struggle. And this guy's 160 pounds, and they were just floored. And they're like, "How are you doing this?" And he's a rock climber, so he's got natural strength and it doesn't necessarily visibly show up. But yeah, you got to treat everybody as an individual, and appearances can be somewhat deceiving sometimes.
Without a doubt. But the thing that you have to be careful with, and everybody thinks, well, I've got to get bigger, bigger, bigger. That's extra baggage you carry.
Sure.
You know, if you can't use it efficiently,
Yeah.
Then it's just extra baggage. So I came up with a theory that I work with my athletes was, you know, enough, how much is enough? You know, how can we be strong enough?
Yeah.
And so we didn't have to bench 600 pounds. Actually, in 9 years at USC, which we were very successful during that time, we only had five guys the whole time that could bench over 500 pounds. And these guys were the doors, shoulders were broad as doors, yeah. And their arms were short.
Yeah.
And so they were meant to bench press. Well, we play Michigan a couple times in the Rose Bowl, and they'd have 10 or 15 guys on their team that could bench 500 pounds.
Okay.
But if you can't bring that load to bear,
yeah.
If you can't move into a position efficiently, then you're not going to win the battle.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things that do what it takes to become the best athlete at your game.
Do you think the example of your dad turning things around in his, do you think that played a role in how you approached a team?
Sure. Without a doubt. I think the way my mom brought me up, it's again, my mentors that have been around. I'm not afraid to ask a stupid question. Mm. I've always believed that if I didn't know, it wasn't stupid. And so I don't know if anybody does puzzles, but if you think about trying to do a jigsaw puzzle and if you're missing that one point,
yeah,
that one piece, if I could find that one piece, everything would come together.
Yeah.
Well, that's what my questions are. If I'm missing that one piece, if I get that piece, it may tie everything together so I can understand it better.
Yeah.
So I could teach it better and relate it to what I'm trying to do. Most of my training did not come out of physiology, kinesiology books. My master's degree is in history.
Okay.
And so I'm reading Crazy Horse. I'm reading William Wallace. I'm reading Heinz Guderian. I'm reading about the masters of movement. Alexander the Great, with the way that he moved his smaller troops in to be successful. And so if we look at war, it was not about who had the most soldiers. It was about who moved more efficiently. If you look at modern warfare, it's the small groups that move more efficiently rather than the big armies that are marching out.
Sure.
And so, you know, that's the way sports should be also.
Fascinating. Yeah. So I was looking around on your site before, coming in, you wrote a blog post recently about the concept of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Past few episodes here on the show, so, you know, usually on the show here we talk about informed consent, natural medicine, medical freedom, surrounding those kinds of topics, and we've really seen that come under attack these past few years. And one of the things that we've observed, Dr. Dan and I, is just this pervasive nature of fear and fear messaging and putting a population into this fear mode. How does that tie into your line of work, to what you see with working with athletes, with individuals? What does fear do related to performance, to that mental game, that mental chatter? What are you seeing?
You shut everything down. When you live in a world of fear, when you're living in a world of chaos, that everything is wrong and you can't get yourself to speed, and it just shuts you down. Everything you're trying to do, everything you work with in your life, if you have a great fear about doing something different, about being different, about living different, then you're going to shut yourself down. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to be you. When you're not you, you're not living your life. Again, you're living the life for somebody else. You're living what their expectations are. And so that's a limiting ability right there, is when we do not live a life that is meant for us.
Yeah.
Fear comes out of so many places. Fear becomes out of a lack of knowledge. We talked about earlier about negative messaging.
Yeah.
80% of our individual conversations with ourselves, 80% are negative connotations, telling ourselves we don't look good, we're not good enough, we're never going to be successful. Think about that. We are brainwashing ourselves that we're not going to do it. And just thinking positively doesn't change it.
Sure.
You've got to change the negative patterns.
So I'm curious, do you see that same type of negative self-talk pattern and that like internal messaging? Do you see that also with some of these NFL players, college players? Because I think just the layman, you know, sitting at home watching the Super Bowl, we think, you know, these guys are just on their game all the time, positive, you know, all that, but do you see the same type of phenomenon going on with these high-level performing athletes?
Watch a field goal kicker. You watched the Super Bowl, a missed extra point by the 49ers sent the game into overtime. It would have been a situation where the Chiefs would have had to score a touchdown to either win the game, but they couldn't have sent it into overtime. And that's a big difference, scoring a touchdown or kicking a field goal. There's a whole different mindset to that. And so had they made that extra point, it would now be a four-point lead, and it would have forced the Chiefs to have to score a touchdown. Then it would have changed the dynamics. Now, that kicker has kicked 1,000 kicks before that, or 10,000, or whatever number of kicks there are.
Right.
And so for him to go in there and just whiff it, you know, it's because the messaging, the situation he was in, there was something that wasn't on his side.
Yeah.
And so when you don't have that same heartbeat, when you can't get away from the negative, I'm going to miss this, I'm going to miss this, I'm going to miss this. And all of a sudden, you know, here's what happens in life. You keep telling yourself you're going to miss it.
Yeah.
You're going to miss it.
Yeah. Right?
And so you've got to set yourself up by limiting the negative things that you're saying to yourself and look at yourself in the mirror and say, yeah, I'm special.
Yeah.
There are things that I do. I call them my crayons. All right. Think about everybody has their crayons.
What does that mean?
Everybody has their crayons. And this goes back to a story. When I was growing up, my mother would buy me the Crayola crayons, the big one, because
the big box.
I'm a grinder.
With the sharpener on the
back? No. The big crayons.
Oh, the big crayons.
Yeah.
Okay.
The big crayons. Okay. All right. Because I was a grinder. If I had the little ones, they'd break in my hands. And so when I colored, I would color so hard that if I was doing an ocean scene, it would become three-dimensional.
Oh, wow.
You know, with so much crayon. And then I didn't just color within the picture. I colored outside the picture. I colored outside the box. Yeah. And then I colored on the desk, too. I mean, that was just that kind of a grinder. And then one day I looked next to me. There's a young lady there, and she had that box of 128 crayons.
Okay. Yeah.
And with the crayon sharpener in the back.
Yeah.
And I felt bad. Not for me, because my 8 crayons were now in a sandwich bag, not a Ziploc. I'm way back where you got to fold them over. It's a sandwich bag. And there was this shrapnel. The paper was long gone. The box was destroyed. Okay. Just chunks of crayon. And I looked at that young lady, and I felt bad for her. Because when she opened up that crayon, 2/3 of the crayons there still had the flat top from the factory.
Never touched.
Mm. Think about that in your life. What are those skills and abilities that you have that makes you unique, that makes you special, that makes you different than everybody else? Those are your crayons. And if you don't use them, if you leave them in the box, then you don't get a redo on this. I believe we get one chance.
Yeah.
You know, we have this one opportunity to go ahead and seize. And this goes back to a Marshall Mathers song, Eminem, you know.
Okay.
You know, if you've given one shot, one opportunity to seize everything you ever wanted in one moment, would you capture it or let it slip? And how many people are out there letting their lives slip because they're not using every one of their crayons? Now, if you think, Dr. Bradford, if I had a bowl here full of crayons, how many crayons would you pull out? And each of those crayons was a different skill or ability, talent that you had. Just how many could you think of? If I had a bowl of 500, how many would come out of that?
Yeah, you know, for me, probably 5 or 10, maybe 12.
Yeah, mine was 8.
Yeah.
You know, and so those crayons, that box of 8 crayons was perfect for me.
Yeah.
It was built for me. I understood who I was. I understood what I could do. Yeah. I understood my talents. Now, I'm not as smart as anybody. I was a C student in high school.
Okay.
All right. I went to college, got my master's degree, but it was in history and I loved history, so I could really do well in that.
Yeah.
I don't have any special abilities. I was never bitten by a radioactive spider. Never. Okay. I don't have that ability. And people that are listening right now are so far more talented than I am, but I've taken my career and went from a high school coach to winning a Super Bowl. Okay. How could that happen? Well, because I believed in myself and I did not allow the fears that, that surround other people.
Yeah.
That we talked about the voices. Let's be the average of the 5 people you're with. Al Capone once said, when asked about people he trusts, he said, I'd rather have 4 quarters than 100 pennies.
Mm-hmm.
I'd rather have 4. Now, they're both a dollar. I got it. They're both a dollar.
Yeah.
All right. But those 4 quarters, which one do you want to hang? Which baggage do you want to have in your pocket all day long?
Yeah.
Because you have those 100 people with their 100 opinions. half of those people are going to go ahead and put the fear in. Like we've said, you know, half the people don't care about your problems, and the other half are glad you got them, okay? And so they're going to go ahead and keep heaping it on. But when we look at the fear that we surround ourselves in with the voices we have, the way we talk to ourselves, 80% of our self-messaging is negative messaging.
And that's devastating. So a couple of weeks back, we talked about a book that I'd recently read. It's called The Indoctrinated Brain. It's by Dr. Michael Nels. He's a physician or scientist out of Germany. And he talks about the effect, the biochemical kind of brain effect that fear can have. It decimates function in a place in the brain called the hippocampus. Mm-hmm. The hippocampus is where you store memory. It's where you store and are able to retrieve memories about yourself. It's where you can build kind of your life story. It's where function of being able to critically think and take in information and parse it out and not immediately like emotionally respond to it. But constant fear messaging will kick off hormonal signals, which then go up and damage that area of the brain. And you're not able to form new memory. You're not able to critically think. You're not able to like discover possibilities of what might be. Devastating. And,
It is. And I believe that is the one thing that stops people.
Yeah.
My book is entitled Move or Die.
Yeah.
Okay. Move or Die means that unless you continue to keep moving in your life professionally, you're going to get stuck. You're going to stagnate.
Yeah.
And you're going to die professionally.
Yeah.
And so when you die professionally, 50 years later, you or 30 years later, you retire and they give you a gold watch. All right. You don't die physically.
Yeah,
you just die with that goal, that dream. Now, I finished coaching when I was 58 years old. I walked away. I said, that's all I need. Yeah. I've done everything I wanted. All right. And then I went and wrote a best-selling book.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you're in their 50s or 60s or 70s, chapter 8 of my book is called Leave Your Mark.
Okay.
Leave Your Mark. What are you going to be known for? Because you have all these special skills and abilities that people need to know.
Yeah.
And when you just go ahead and box them up and say, I'm done, I'm walking away, mm-hmm. then you've taken all those gifts you've been given and you're not sharing with everybody else.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the marks that people make, and the premise of the chapter was the caves in France that have the handprints of primitive man on the wall.
Okay.
All right. They left their mark. They're saying, I was here.
Yeah.
I've done this. We made it this far.
Yeah.
And here are the animals that are here. And so what are you doing with your future? Are you done? Are you just sitting in your house right now and not sharing your life with somebody?
Yeah.
One of my best friends, one of my quarters was a teacher for 35 years with special needs children.
Oh,
awesome. Amazing. Just an amazing man. 35 years as a teacher, retired. I said, okay. Kind of like what Edmund Hillary said to Tenzing Norgay when they got to the top of Mount Everest. Mm. Turned to him and said, so now what? All right. All right. And so I turned to Todd and I said, so now what?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just going to, you know, I got some stuff I need to do in my house. I said, okay.
Yeah.
After 6 months. So now what?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm shoveling. All the lessons he learned in the classroom.
Mm.
All the gifts that he was giving, we go back to Mandela, all the lessons he learned through the failures and also the successes that he did.
Right.
For those young teachers.
Right.
Who need to hear his voice.
Yeah.
Who need to read somebody else that was there saying, hey, I was there, the hand on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I was there and we survived.
Yeah.
You know, and so what are you doing with your time that if you haven't reached out to help somebody?
Sure.
That's what we've got to do as a human race, is continue to give our gifts to people. And so you go, success to me is when you do something that accomplishes your goals and dreams,
yeah.
Then you're successful.
Yeah.
And whatever that is, I don't care what it is. When you accomplish your goals and dreams, then you're successful.
Yeah.
Now, significance comes when you reach back and help somebody else accomplish their goals and dreams.
I love that. Yeah. I've had a few mentors in my life. And they're so valuable, you know, to be able to talk to somebody who has gone through that or can provide some insight or some vision or, you know, pass on some patience, you know, if you're going through something. I can think of one mentor. His name's Dr. Rick Kirshner. He's retired now. He's up in Idaho. Sold off some stock and moved from Oregon to Idaho. He couldn't handle the politics out there. And he's living in the, not in the woods, but he's definitely living in nature out there. And one thing that he told me that has stuck with me is he said, I don't know what I think until I write it down. I've always loved writing. And so, you know, that can become an amazing tool to be able to share your experience with so many people. I love that concept of like taking everything that you've learned in your life, putting it in a book or some type of written form.
Right.
I think, you know, with the advent of artificial intelligence and, you know, these chat bots and everything that are writing things for us, I think that's going to become very much a lost art.
Oh, I think so. I think creativity is heading out the window when you can plug some words into a box and it spits out a book.
Yeah.
There's no personal thought. All you're using is stealing from other people's experiences. And where are your experiences at with this? You know, and writing. I write all the time. I found way back that the greatest BS meter is myself. Mm. That when I'm writing something and I look at it and go, that's not me.
Yeah.
That's not who I believe I am. That's not how I believe. I mean, I've gone so far with my website, www.thecoachcarlisle.com. I have my blogs on there. I don't know if anybody reads them, but you know what I do? I get to write that every opportunity. And notice the word I get to.
Mm.
It's no longer a labor. Writing is like a muscle. You continue to write and get stronger at writing and just start it with a paragraph.
Yeah.
And then a couple. Then all of a sudden you're going to find yourself that you just can't stop.
Yeah.
And it just becomes an enjoyable part of your day that you get to go ahead and write down and figure out as you're writing, because you've got to think about it. Then you've got to take the time to write every word. Yeah. And that gives it time to go ahead and simmer in your head and go, you know what? I'm really thinking this, and it's actually that.
So when you write, do you write by hand? Do you type into a computer?
Everything's by hand.
Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. I'm old school. I write on note cards. I wrote in notebooks. My wife always gets me, because she goes, you know, when you go, nobody can read your books because it's in Sanskrit, you know? So on the backside of the Rosetta Stone is it goes ahead and deciphers my writing. Okay. But it's a shorthand type of writing that I've used constantly. I can read it.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
clear as mud to me.
Yeah.
But I've got to sometimes sound it out and think where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
But no, I write everything by hand, and then it goes to, then I type it.
Yeah.
And so, and yeah, I'm everything I write, everything I type comes from me. There's no AI. There's no assistant doing it. It's just me. Sorry.
Do you write every day?
Yes. Without a doubt. Yeah. I work.
What's your routine?
Go to the gym and train for an hour and a half. It's just what I need to do.
Yeah.
And then go home and I go on the patio. Since we moved down to Arizona about 5 years ago, my mother passed away. And when I left the game of football, my brother Steve and my brother Tom, who live in Arizona, my parents had lived here for 30 years and they'd moved down through their work. I said, you know, they need help with my dad. And so I came down. We sold our house in Seattle and moved down here, found a beautiful house. And so I said, I write out on my patio 300 days of the year.
Nice.
And if I'm not writing, I'm traveling and speaking, you know, to groups around the country. So, you know, and I even write then too.
So what do you do mentally or physically, or do you, when you hit a block? Because it inevitably happens. You know, you go through a patch where you're like, I don't have anything to write about.
Yeah. Hemingway says, don't write yourself empty.
Okay.
And so I read quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so and I never read the same author. I'm always looking for new authors, new ideas. And that gives me new thoughts and patterns of thinking. Documentaries are great.
Yeah.
And then I get to watch them, I get to listen to them, and I get to see, and I take everything. I'm a process guy. I want to see how everything's built and how everything's built up and how everything's organized and how people think. And so that helps me go ahead and get back into my writing.
Cool.
And so I might write 8 or 10 blogs in a matter of 2 weeks, and then I might not write anything, you know, and I'll just keep posting those, and then all of a sudden I have a burst of ideas, and so I always try to get ahead. I'm always trying to write ahead.
What's been your favorite book that you've read this year or last year?
I think Posh's book is great, the Last Lecture. I was big in with samurai named Miyamoto Musashi, who wrote The Five Rings. Mm. And so it's kind of a text on how to be a sword fighter. But if you read between the lines, he's also telling you, you know, this is how a life should be lived. And in the last chapter of The Five Rings, he says that there's nothing outside of you that will make you richer, stronger, better, and that everything you need is within. And it's like that captures, he's got to wait to his last book of Five Rings. It's last ring. And it's the book of nothingness. But it's everything you need is within you. You don't need anything more. But you got to look at that person in the mirror every day.
Sure.
And say, you got it. Yeah. You're okay. You're going to be fine. You're tough. You're strong. You're powerful. You're beautiful. You're whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because you are what you are. Yeah. You are what you were intended to be. This is who you are. Now we can dial stuff down. We can change the way, you know, we can lose weight. We can gain weight. We can, you know, go to the gym. We can walk, whatever we want. But we are who we are. So let's go ahead and celebrate who we are and then look at those crayons that we have in that box.
That's a great analogy. I love that because, you know, that story you told, you could have taken that a completely different way mentally and looked over at that classmate of yours and gotten super jealous and started to think, oh, well, look how much more she has than me, and instantly enter into that comparison.
Yeah. But I had no idea how to use those other crayons.
Sure.
It was who I was.
Yeah.
And so I couldn't live anybody else's life.
Yeah.
You know, when I got into coaching, I was going to be, and this was my arrogance. And in my first chapter, I talk about my arrogance, ignorance, and inflexibility, the three deadly bullets that kill every career, arrogance, ignorance, and inflexibility. And so when I graduated from college, I didn't even apply for an assistant coach's job. Mm. It was a head job. Why would I want to sit behind somebody who couldn't know more than I did?
Yeah.
And so after four games, we were 1-3, okay? Driving the school bus home, and that epiphany hit that I don't know anything about the game of football, okay? So I left that job after 1 year because I said, hey, I'm the wrong person for this job.
Yeah.
And I went to another job where I became the assistant, and I started to learn.
Yeah.
But I still brought that whole idea of ignorance with me.
Yeah.
Okay. The ignorance was that I thought I knew everything still. And so went to a coaching clinic in Little Rock, and the speaker was a highly proclaimed coach in the 80s. And so I go to the 300 coaches in this room and, you know, just can't wait. He gets up there and tells two off-color jokes that would have gotten anybody fired in this day and age.
Sure.
All right. And so he goes, I've got a meeting I've got to go to. And so my offensive coordinator's here. He knows all the answers. So there goes that coaching offensive coordinator. He goes, I know you're here to see the coach, and he's not going to hurt my feelings if you leave. Well, why would I want to sit and listen to an underling who just won the national championship? I was in high school.
Yeah.
I knew everything.
Yeah.
So I left. So I'm walking down, and there's this coach in the bar in the hotel with four of his old cronies drinking whiskey. That was his meeting they had to get to forget you 300 coaches. So next year I brought my golf clubs, and I had a tee time.
Yeah.
And Bo Schembechler was speaking that year.
Okay.
And from Michigan. And I said, well, I'm going to go listen to both, because my tee off time wasn't until like 2, and it was like 11 o'clock or and so. Went to listen to Bo, and I stood in the back of the room because that's where all the cool guys, and I could slip out the door when my tee time. And I looked up front, all right, and there was Tom Osborne, who was the head coach of the University of Nebraska at the time. There was Eddie Robinson, head coach of Grambling, and there was Tom Landry sitting in the front row with notebooks. And here I am, a high school coach.
One foot out the door. Yeah.
And so, I mean, there goes the epiphany again. I said, I can't do this. And so I from now on, if I'm at a clinic, I'm up on the far right. Yeah. I don't hear well on my right ear, but my left ear. And so I'm there 20 minutes before the talk, and I stay throughout the talk and ask the stupid questions. I'm that guy in meetings who asks a stupid question.
Yeah.
That all of a sudden becomes a revelation for everybody in the group.
Sure.
And so there goes the ignorant. Now, in flexibility, I was also the yelling. I was once given the title of designated yeller.
Okay.
Because my idols, Bo Schembechler, Vince Lombardi, Bobby Knight, they won championships.
Yeah.
And they yelled. So I said, you know what? If I yell louder, I'll win more champions.
Yeah.
After 11 years, I was 33-77-1.
Okay.
33 wins, 77 losses, and one tie. If you hired me, you could be assured of 3 wins a season. Okay.
Yeah.
And then I had a Chicken House fan go through my skull, crush my skull.
Oh, my goodness.
It eggshelled the skull, tore the brain sac. So as we were getting ready, because I had just gotten a new job as a head coach, and the doctor said, he goes, okay, you can't strain, because intracranial pressure is going to kill you.
Yeah.
So I couldn't lift weights. He said, you can't have any contact, intracranial pressure is going to kill you. Don't hold a sneeze in. Because intracranial pressure is going to kill you. I said, check.
Yeah.
And you can't yell.
No more yelling.
And I looked at my box, my coaching toolbox, and the sledgehammer was gone. My box was empty. Okay. So I go out to that first practice. Now, this is my first year with this team. I go out to that first practice, and I couldn't speak any louder than this.
Oh, man.
I mean, 11 years as a coach.
Yeah.
And for the first time in my career, the athletes weren't reeling back in respect. And I have my quote signs up right now. Okay?
Respect through fear.
Respect
huh?
through fear. They leaned in, Dr. Bradford. Mm. They leaned in because they wanted to learn. They wanted to be better.
Yeah.
They didn't need to be intimidated. They didn't need to be bullied.
Yeah.
And so I tell those 3 stories because no matter who you are, no matter what it is, look at how you're doing with your life.
Yeah.
Is it right? Are you being as successful as possible? If not, you can make the change.
Yeah.
You can sit up in the front of the meeting. Okay. You can go ahead and get to that profession that gives you a passion, that teaches you what you need to do. Or you can go ahead and change the way you go about your work. But change is essential. If you want to be different, you've got to begin to think different.
Yeah.
So if you're not where you are, want to be right now in your life, then there's this opportunity that you can get there when you change the way you think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that comes back to that concept of moving, you know, constantly moving.
No.
If you're sitting still and not making progress and not learning something new, you don't have to learn something new every single day, but if you're not.
Yes, you do.
Well,
you've got to find something. There's got to be that new aha moment.
Yeah.
All right. But we continue to change because we are not happy where we're at. We have to continue moving, or we're going to die socially, spiritually, physically. We're going to get closer and closer if we don't change the way we go about our lives.
Dr. Dan, if he was here, he would share his quote about how disease and aging is the progression towards comfort.
Yeah.
You get comfortable. You know, that couch looks real comfortable.
Right.
And instead of moving and learning and doing new things.
And so that chair is comfortable on that desk.
Yeah.
You know what to do in this office.
Right.
All right.
Right.
Now, you're upset every time these junior people keep passing you by.
Yeah.
And going up to that next level.
Yeah.
Well, because you didn't change.
Right.
You've got to go ahead and take that risk. And here's a risk. So I'm a high school teacher in Eastern Arkansas. Making teacher money. My wife has her own business at that time.
Yeah.
And so I get a call from one of my mentors, says, hey, I got a graduate assistant position at the University of Arkansas in the weight room. Do you want it? I said, without a doubt. Now, we had to leave that job. We were also living rent-free in my wife's grandparents' house who had passed away. Bless their souls.
Comfortable.
So we got a lot of... We gave up everything. We packed it up and moved across the state from Blytheville, Arkansas to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
Wow.
Okay. Packed up everything. Gave up everything. She sold her business. Everything.
Wow.
All right. You would think a college job is paid more than a high school job.
Mm.
I was being paid $400 a month.
Wow.
10 months of the year. Rent was $450 12 months of the year.
Okay.
All right. Now, if you want to go ahead and be successful, sometimes you have to sacrifice and bet everything on yourself, but you've got to look at that self in the mirror and go, I know you can do this.
Yeah.
I know you can do this. And it was a win-win for me because I wanted to get closer. When I was 10 years old, I told my buddy Nate Lau, I'm going to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
All right. Now I'm 30 years old. Okay. I wasn't going to win a Super Bowl at Blyville High School.
Right.
But I was just one step closer at the University of Arkansas. I would get my master's degree, which in teaching puts you on another pay level.
Yeah.
Okay. Because you've increased. So even if I didn't get another college job, I would get a high school job, but I'd have my master's degree. So I would earn more money. So it was either that I was going to move up or I was going to get better at what I did in high school level.
Yeah.
And because I took that risk, the head coach there knew a guy named Pete Carroll. Okay. And so when Pete Carroll became the head football coach at the University of Southern California,
yeah,
I was at the University of Tennessee at the time. He called his buddy's assistant coach, me,
right,
and said, hey, you want to come to USC with me? Well, here's the thing. I'd just been diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
All right? And they gave me a 40% chance to survive.
Wow.
All right. Now you have to get in that mindset again. You can either say, oh, coach, I'm sorry. I'm just going to curl up here and hopefully survive or let the cancer take me. Okay.
Right.
No.
Right.
Dr. Bradford, I had two choices.
Wow.
I was either going to live or I was going to die, but I was going to go ahead and do this my way. And I told Pete, I said, I've been diagnosed with cancer. And he didn't even hesitate. He goes, is this going to change you as a coach? I said, no, sir. Now, this was Friday at 2 a.m., Saturday morning, 2 a.m., when mm-hmm. he called me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, he says, it's going to change you as a coach. I said, no, sir. He said, can you be here on Monday? I had just gotten chemo, bad stuff, and I cleaned it up for the
right.
podcast.
Right.
You know, I had a 40% chance to live. It wasn't good stuff they were giving me. They were trying yeah. to keep me alive.
Yeah.
And so I went from being the associate head strength coach at the University of Tennessee to the head strength coach.
Mm.
So packed my bags on Saturday, flew to LA on Sunday, was in the hotel at 4:30 in the morning. I woke up, walked across campus, was in the weight room ready to go at 5 a.m., ready for the 6 o'clock group.
There you go.
I never missed a day of work. I would work on Friday, hop on the red eye, fly in, get my chemo on Saturday, sleep that day, hop back on the plane on Sunday, and then fly out to LA again to start my week again. I was giving myself Neupogen shots to increase my white blood cells because they said, well, you'd have to travel all the way to Norris Cancer Center, which is in East LA.
Yeah.
And or I said, could I do it myself? They said, well, it's painful. I said, okay. It's okay.
Let's do it.
So you know, we'll see about that.
Yeah.
And so, boom, you know, give the shot. You know, and so you've got to be willing to risk everything
yeah.
to get what you want. It's that different set. And too many people are afraid to go ahead and take the chance on themselves.
Right.
We're not talking about going to the casino and throwing dice and hopefully you're going to win. We're betting on you. And if you believe in you and you understand your crayons,
yeah,
then you understand I'm going to be successful no matter what.
Love it. Man, what an inspirational story. There's at every turn. Yeah. Love it. Man, this
hasn't been a straight road.
Well, it never is. I have, I'll flip around a piece of paper sometimes and draw it for patients. You know, sometimes we think that healing is going to be this linear move in an upward direction, and it's not. It's a Rocky Mountains.
Right.
And some days suck, and some days are amazing. And on the whole, if you're moving in the right direction, then eventually you'll get there.
Yeah, I saw a drawing. It was on social media, and it had my plan, which is you're talking about from point A to point Z, and it's a straight line all going up.
Right.
And then it said God's plan, and then it was there were pit hole, and there was and spikes and rough waters and dips and mountains to climb.
Yeah.
And that's the way life is, but that's okay. That's the adventure that we get to live.
Yeah.
In this great thing called life, and you have this one opportunity, this one chance to grasp, you know, to seize everything you ever wanted. I go back to Marshall Mathers on that, but it's so powerful.
Yeah.
You know, and Stephen Crane, the author of The Red Badge of Courage, wrote a poem. And when I was a junior in high school, we were supposed to pick a poem. And this poem has 32 words. And that's the one I chose.
Yeah, because my kids do the same thing. It's the shortest one.
But it stuck with me, Dr. Bradford. It stuck with me.
Yeah.
And it says, I saw a man pursuing the horizon. Well, that's actually the title, too.
Okay.
So I had the first seven words, if I just remember the title.
In the back.
I saw a man pursuing the horizon. Round and round they sped. This disturbed me. I accosted the man. It is futile, I said. You can never, you lie, he cried, and ran on. And see, that's chasing our passion.
Mm.
We all have the people that are against us. And that's that person saying, you know, that perturbed me.
Yeah.
It is futile because they can't do it. So you can't do it then. Ergo. And so they put all their negatives on you.
Right.
And they're telling you, but you've got to be the person. You've got to be the person who's saying, you lie.
Yeah.
And then run on. And you're chasing the horizon. Your horizon is your passion. You keep chasing it every single day. How special can I be every day?
Yeah. I've heard another phrase of goes something like, those who say it can't be done need to get out of the way of those who are doing it.
Exactly. How about that? How many people are slowing us down on the path? And so, you know, there are people that never, myriad of people told me I never could do it.
Yeah.
Except for me.
Right.
And then I had my people around me, my wife and my friends and everything that you know, we talked about the quarters.
Yeah.
And these quarters are the ones who lift you up. And here's the thing about quarters. They're also going to go ahead and tell you the truth that you need to hear.
Whether you like it or not.
Right. And I go back to the anchor story.
Yeah.
You know, which friends are these? Are these the people that are trying to keep you in the bay there so you can't go off and become the best you can?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they the ones stopping you from crashing in the rocks?
Yeah.
And you can always tell when your friends don't benefit by the truth they tell you.
Yeah.
When they don't get anything out of it other than, you know, hey, you know, it's not like, oh, I wouldn't do that because, you know, no.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do it because they're standing in the way. All right.
Right.
And there's a lot of things that I'll do that you can't do, but can you do it? Know your crayons, move through this process of understanding where you're going to go and find those people around you, those voices and choices that lift you up so you can make those great choices. You should see my hand movements. I hope you can watch the video of this because I'm like directing.
I
you
love
know,
it.
It's like if we had an orchestra here, it would be Mozart.
I love it. Well, Chris, it's been such a pleasure talking to you. Where can people find you? You've got your website. You've got a book out. I'm looking forward to reading that.
Yeah.
And you've got your blog. What?
Yeah, it's The Coach Carlisle is my Instagram. And then my website is www.thecoach.com, and then Carlisle, CARLISLE.com. TheCoachCarlisle.com is my website.
Excellent.
And everything's there. You can get my book there. You know, you purchase my book, I'll sign it and send it back to you. It's also on Amazon.
Awesome. So. Well, thank you so much. Man, it's refreshing to have conversations with motivated people. I love it. So again, thank you for being here. Thanks for joining us on Community Guidelines. I'm Dr. Bradford. You can find me on Gab, ABND. You can find the office here, downtowngilberthealthcare.com. And until next time, Chris, thanks you.
Thank you very much. And Dr. Graham, you missed the best show ever.
Yeah. We'll have to play it back for him.
Amen.
All right. Thanks. And we'll talk to you next time.